this morning. I was translating for somebody with Devi Gulzar, and it was a very brief meeting that they had, just literally a few minutes. But the question that they had was interesting, and Devi Gulzar's reply was even more interesting. They've been in Gyan just a very short time, but they're very sincere in the effort that they're making. And their question to Daddy was, what's the shortcut to achieving a high status? Because they're seeing that Daddy Gulzar has been around for 60-something years, as with the other Daddies. And they've been with Baba just a very few years. And so that's where their question came from. What's the shortcut? And Daddy's answer was, let Baba be responsible and always stay light. That's it. And it was then just, and they weren't asking for more explanation, but that was Daddy's message to them. And afterwards I was reflecting on it and thinking that that's the topic I'd like to share with all of you. The shortcut. How to be able to reach that. Never mind the word status, because that's whatever will come in the future. But the way to be able to have the guarantee for a status for the future is your stage. So how do you create that high stage today? And then the status is going to happen. And out of that question in my mind came another thought. And that was, what's the one subject that I've been hearing the Dadis speak about most frequently this year? And I'm thinking, not just the times I've been with the Dadis in Madhuban, but we had the good fortune of Daddy Gulzar in London in June, and then Daddy Kumarka with us in September, and I've had the fortune of traveling with Daddy non-stop for a few months now. And the subject that comes up most frequently is the subject of not giving or taking sorrow. And it fits in completely with this whole aspect of staying light and letting Baba be responsible. And so that's another aspect of the subject that I want us to look at. Lightness, yes. And in terms of lightness, obviously if I'm heavy, then I'm going to stay down here. But if I'm light, I'm going to be able to fly. And only if my stage is of the flying quality now, can I move forward in the way that Baba wants me to move. But also, the circumstances and the situations of the world get heavier and heavier. And if I let myself just be part of that, I'm going to feel myself sinking further and further down. And so to be able to be up above that so that I don't get pulled down, and to be able to then stay with Baba, connected with Baba, I need to be light. And taking and giving sorrow is, of course, the biggest thing that comes. And there was an interesting comment that Daddy made a few days ago, and it was another perspective on this whole thing of giving and taking sorrow. You know how Daddy Janki always comes up with gems that make you see things in a specific way, and she does it just all the time. It's not a question of churning. It's just there. And so she's picking out these jewels and sharing them. And she said that if you have an honest heart, you're not going to give sorrow. And if you have a big, generous heart, you're not going to take sorrow. Interesting. And in terms of, I haven't associated, you know, she's taken many classes on the subject of honest heart, big heart, clean heart, and all these things. But in the context of putting both these things together, for me it was a new perspective. So, honesty in my heart. And yes, if I'm honest with Baba, I'm honest with myself, I'll be checking and changing, and so the things that make me give sorrow to others, I'll be watching that and making sure that that doesn't happen. And when there isn't honesty with the self or with Baba, then I don't even realize I'm doing this. I keep giving sorrow and it continues, and when's it going to stop? Only when I'm really, really honest with myself do I even realize what's happening. And without that honesty, then you must have seen it in others, maybe you've seen it in yourself. It's very easy to see it in others. And so certainly looking at others and seeing that, then you ask yourself, well, what's happening in my own case? But you see it in others that they keep giving, they're constantly causing sorrow in one way or another, and they're not realizing it. And I'm sure that if they did actually realize it, their conscience wouldn't let them continue. But they're blind to it. They don't realize it. And they're justifying something that they say and do, thinking that it's right, without understanding that, well, more important than the right or wrong is the question of, is it causing sorrow? And so, let me be honest with myself so that I can actually see where it is that I'm causing sorrow. And then, the big heart, the generous heart, because when I take sorrow, it's because I'm not able to accommodate and merge and absorb it and say, never mind, let's go, let's move on, let's do whatever needs to happen. And so we get stuck. And it's a fact that if you keep on taking sorrow, not only is it making you heavy at that moment, but the accumulation of sorrow is actually going to cause huge blocks. And it's not going to allow you to take Baba's love, and it's not going to allow you to move forward. And in Brahman life, it's Baba's love that makes it easy for us, like Baba said yesterday. When you're following Srimad, then everything is successful and you're seeing the results, that everything is filled with blessings. And it was lovely hearing Baba make that connection in such a logical manner. I felt yesterday's Murali was different to the Muralis we've been hearing for some years now, especially in Om Shantivan. Especially here in Shantivan, it's tended to be Baba speaking to multi-thousands. And so, Baba's entertaining us a little, Baba's talking to this one, new ones, old ones, everyone all together. And so, it's many, many things that Baba picks up and mixes them all together to present a beautiful bouquet of flowers. Well, yesterday I felt it was really like one of the original style of Yak Muralis. Baba takes up one topic, and Baba clarifies that whole topic, step by step by step by step. And so yesterday, Baba talking about, well, what's the proof of Srimad? What's the proof of blessings and so on? And so, no labor. And when you're experiencing Baba's love, no labor. And when there isn't that experience, I haven't followed Srimad, I'm not experiencing blessings, and then everything is laborious and heavy. And so, I want us to look at this particular topic, because that first aspect of giving sorrow, I think, things come to shake us. And even if for some time we're under the illusion thinking, it's fine, I'm okay, no problem, the feedback of discontent that we get from others makes us stop and say, well, let me see what's wrong and what's going on. And hopefully, I mean, there are souls sometimes, even after a long while, it seems that they're still not able to see. But mostly that's not the case. Mostly then there's something that makes us see the self and you realize. But this giving of sorrow, this receiving sorrow, it seems that even realization isn't sufficiently a factor to stop that from happening. Am I right? That our hearts have been so fragile, and to make them so strong that nothing can make them break anymore at all seems to require a huge, huge amount of work that still needs to happen. And yes, from the fragile, sensitive state. And again, the question, it seems that we're more fragile than we were before we came to Baba. Is that right? Who thinks that that's so? I'm surprised it's the minority that agree with me. Because I thought it would be the majority. But maybe you need to again look back and see what's going on. But usually I've seen that, you know, in Laukic life, you know, whatever is, maybe in Laukic life you just say, I have to accept it and carry on. You know, whether it's a difficult boss you have, a difficult mother-in-law you have, a difficult partner you have. You know, people say, this is it. I've just got to live with it. And if I can't live with it, okay, finish and get a new job, get a new wife, get a new husband, get a new mother-in-law. And maybe, you know, we deal with things in that way. And in Gyan, you can't, because you know that it's karma and it's got to be sorted out. And so you tend to let things carry on. And you can't instantly deal with them on that sort of external level in that way. So maybe this is why then we get very fragile. Maybe we were fragile and we didn't realize it because we dealt with it differently. And today we can't deal with those things in the same way. And also because I think we tend to suppress a lot in Brahman life. In Agyan, pre-gyan, things happened and you had an outburst and you exploded and finished, gone, and you moved on. And of course it created a sanskar in you and you didn't know about that. So, but you thought, okay, I finished with it, and you didn't hold it in that same way. And in gyan again, you don't want an outburst, you don't want to increase the sanskars of anger. And so you say, I should really tolerate this, I should really accept this, and so you keep it. And so maybe that's festering inside. But anyway, it does seem definitely so that we become more sensitive after Gyan. And our expectations, of course, are huge after Gyan. Pre-Gyan, and it's not such a huge expectation, you know that everybody is needy, you know that relationships are anyway delicate, and so you're aware of that. But in Brahman life, the expectation is that But the other person's Gyani, they've been in Gyan longer than me, or they've been, you know, whatever, whatever. And so the expectations we have are quite huge. And so then when something happens, then it hurts a lot. Maybe even our expectations of ourselves, and we're not fulfilling those expectations. And so that's causing us sorrow. But in one way or another, it seems to be that, you know, which is why Baba was saying that, okay, there is that attainment through faith. But how come it's not visible on your face? It's not visible in your behavior. And it's a fact. What's more often visible on people's faces is, you know, deep thought and introspection and a little bit of concern and worry. When I look at morning class anywhere in the world, most places, London included, definitely, as people are listening to the Murali, it's the new people who seem to have more intoxication that they are hearing God's knowledge than those who have a deep foundation of faith, and they've been but for long years, many years, but I don't see that intoxication in their faces, in my own face also. I put myself in the same boat. My own face doesn't have that same intoxication probably also. And so what's happening? There's things that's going on that are there that we are holding into ourselves. And so the lesson, let me develop a big heart, and so a generous heart, so that I can really let go of things and merge things and say it's okay and move on. Genuinely say it's okay and move on. And of course, I've just been in Israel and I've seen where not only is it a dangerous situation personally, individually, where you hold on to things and you don't forget and forgive, but culturally, historically, it's an absolute recipe for disaster. We were having very, very high-powered meetings in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. It's long titled the World Council of Religious and Spiritual Leaders that is part of, and that is a follow-up to the Millennium Peace Summit, which was the only spiritual event that's ever happened, hosted in the UN by the UN, as distinct to NGOs hosting things. And so it's out of that that came this thing. And there were meetings with the top rabbis in Israel, the top the Prime Minister of Palestine, and top Palestinian scholars, the Vatican representative, the Anglican top person, the Greek patriarch top person, the four advisors to the Prime Minister of Israel. So it was that level. But what struck me about the rabbis and the priests, the three top people from the Catholic, the Anglican, and the Orthodox Church, the other side, it wasn't so much the history that they were talking about, but these two sides, they had every date fixed in their mind, pre-history and present history, and, you know, like quoting 400 AD, 900 AD, and all sorts of things. It was to the letter, to the day, everything was absolutely printed. This happened at such and such a time, and this was the outcome, and so and so. And so they're carrying all that stuff in their heads. And so what's in their hearts? At the present moment in their hearts, a huge heaviness and a great, great burden. And so impossible for them to actually let go and forgive and forget. And that situation where neither side is willing to let go and forgive and forget, and it's violence and more violence and a cycle of violence that's just unending and in fact is escalating all the time. What's going on in here within human individuals? You see that multiplied in terms of several millions, and you see that there's just a non-stop battlefield that's there. Really, it's a... We were at the chief rabbi's house in Tel Aviv, and 10 minutes earlier, there'd been a bomb explosion just a few streets away. So, you know, it's just non-stop, it's ongoing. You don't know where they're going to strike next. You're here, and that's where they're going to be. You're there, and maybe that's where they're going to be. And in fact, that turned out to be a criminal case rather than a terrorist case, but there was a bomb anyway. So, and on a personal level, well, what is it that I'm holding on to and not allowing myself to forgive and forget and finish it and let go? And so this thing about stretching your heart and letting Baba's love come in and filling myself with Baba's love to such an extent that really none of those things are able to stay in me anymore. And it has to happen moment to moment on a daily basis. It's not even enough to say, okay, you did this yesterday, and so I'm going to let go of it yesterday. Oh, today I'm going to let go of what happened yesterday and it's okay now. But it's a reality that it's going to keep coming up moment to moment. It's going to keep happening. And it's not even just that it's coming to teach me a lesson, because maybe I've learned that lesson, but it's just the conditions of the world. It's the way the world is. You know, it's like physical health. Okay, so I've finished off one cold and I can't say I'm going to be free now for forever because I've finished one cold. I don't know when the next cold is going to come. And so I just have to take precautions and make sure that I keep my immune system strong and healthy so that it doesn't come back. And so the question, what am I doing in terms of jnana and yoga to keep my inner immune system so strong that I have a guarantee that no matter what happens, I'll be able to cope with it and I'll be able to be strong and it's not going to bother me. And really it's a question of practice. And the more you practice something, the easier it gets and you're able to deal with it faster. You're able to do it that much more quickly. And next is that it becomes totally natural. You're not even having to deal with it in a conscious way. It's come and it's gone. And where last year you would have taken a few days or a few hours to deal with it, today it's come and it's gone and it's left you completely immune. You've been protected. It's, you know, this aspect that Bhakti remembers, immune to anything. Well, it must be the stage that Brahmins reach to the end of the cycle because it's been remembered for thousands of years. And so how did the memorial happen? It happened because we made it happen through the reality of our own experience now. And so to keep such a big heart that I'm able to forgive very easily and through that being able to forget, both these things really truly go together. If I don't forgive, I can't forget. And it's going to stay in my heart. It's going to stay in my mind, but it's also going to stay in my heart. And so it's going to be an interference. You know, when Baba tells us, be sweet, I realize that this term sweet is shorthand language for a state in which there's been a really, really deep transformation in the soul. in which really there's nothing that's causing any bitterness within the soul. If I'm not sweet, and sweetness just isn't a question of courtesy or good language. Good language is important, obviously, in terms of manners and respect and so forth. But more than that, sweetness is when there's a total cleanliness within the soul. And then you're receiving Baba's love and you're sharing Baba's love. And there isn't anything else that's interfering. When our tone of voice becomes a little bit harsh or a little bit rough, it's not because of lack of time. If you want to see the master of time, see Dadi Janki, and she stretches time, and time will do as she wants it to do. You know, planes will be late because they're waiting for her. all sorts of things happen, and really, she'll take over, and she'll be the master of the situation and the master of time and all circumstances. And so when people say, you know, I sort of spoke harshly, or I spoke rudely, or I spoke roughly, because it was the pressure of time, well, it's really my perception. When I say that there's pressure of time, there should never be a situation where I allow anything to be a pressure. But if it is, then there's something not right. But also, that's not the reason why I'm speaking in a way that's not sweet. It's because there's things that have accumulated inside. And so it's not even relevant to the person I'm speaking to at this moment or the situation that I happen to be in, but it's there and I'm holding on to it, and so I need to sort it out. And so one of Daddy's favorite expressions is meditation means cleaning out, cleaning out, cleaning out, purifying. And Baba uses the word purification. But really that's what it is, a cleansing, a cleansing, a cleansing. It's every day that I need to keep doing that, but also the checkpoint of whether I'm doing it or not is this thing about sweetness. And if I'm not being sweet, then if I'm not feeling sweet in the sense of a good feeling, you know, they have what they call the good feeling factor. Very important. Does something make you feel good? And if it makes you feel good, well, so they take a lot of account of that today. But really, the feel-good factor isn't an artificial thing that Baba's teaching us, but a very real thing, that good feelings are an indication that things are clean. And good feelings mean that my language with others and my behavior with others will also communicate those good feelings. It must be something you've come across often enough, that when there's a person you know pretty well and you ask them something that's very simple, basic, and yet the reply they give you isn't what you would expect of them, and there's no reason why it should be like that, but then it makes you wonder, well, why aren't they feeling so happy? What's wrong with them? Then you try and find a moment and say, are you okay? Is something wrong? Are you catching a cold? Are you got flu? Maybe it's a physical thing, but usually it's not so much a physical thing as an emotional thing. And so from my side, that's what I can do. Make sure that I keep my feelings very clean, very pure, by not taking sorrow on any level. Taking sorrow, and immediately the quality of my feelings changes. And then it's very natural that even if it's not giving sorrow in a gross way, that if my aunt is giving you waste thoughts, then that's also a burden on my head. Imagine I've got enough of my own waste thoughts and the burdens that I'm carrying from that, but then I'm causing waste thoughts in you and other people around me. And so how much more burden am I accumulating for myself through doing that? So that's definitely then giving sorrow on a subtle level. And so take sorrow, and there's going to be some way or another, maybe gross and maybe not so gross, subtle, whatever it may be, but that exchange is always going to carry on. And so if I want to stay light so that I can constantly fly, then a very, very important area to look at is this whole question of giving sorrow or taking sorrow. And again today, this morning, that he mentioned, what is the one thing of I that we hold on to? And she didn't actually spell out the answer in her class this morning. She told us all to think about it. But she did share at one point with somebody, and she said that the one thing of I and my that Brahmins hold on to, even after having made effort for a long period of time, and so there's no question of I and my in terms of property, any of those, or people, we've let go of our attachments to all of those things. But the one thing that still remains is my idea, my plan. And my intellect is surrendered to Baba, and yet, because I think that my intellect is surrendered to Baba, here am I thinking that this plan that I have, this idea that I have, I know it's right. And so because I know it's right, it's the only way to do it. And yet, in fact, the reality is that even though it's right, it doesn't necessarily mean that the other idea is wrong. There can be many rights. It's not just one idea that can be right. And it can be many plans that are right. If you think about all the different types of services that are going on, and India is a magnificent vision of all the different types of service, whether it's service of microphones, such as presidents and prime ministers and vice presidents all coming on the same stage, or the general public and the rural areas and the villages and the farmers, you know, you name it, and India's doing it. And so it's happening because there are many, many different things that are right. It's not just one thing which is right, but Baba's given us such a huge spectrum. Do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, and do this. And so anything that anybody says, can I do this? The only thing that would be wrong is it again Srimad? And usually that's not a factor when it comes to my idea or my plan, because Srimad is principles for my life. And yes, there are certain basic principles that you're holding on to, which are the foundation. When it comes to discussion of ideas and service, it's not a question of Srimad says this and no to this. It's really not that at all. And so there's many ideas that are right, many plans that are right. And yet, of course, at that moment when there's this subtle consciousness of I that still I'm holding on to, then it's this that is the bondage. And that he didn't go into it any more detail at that point, but she was very strong that that's the one bondage of I and mine that Brahmins are still caught up with, my idea and my plan. And then the insistence that it has to be this way. And it doesn't. It can be this way or it can be that way. And even if it's maybe the right way, maybe it's not yet the right time. Maybe it'll be the right time in 20 years, and don't know how long the kalpa continues, but I'm thinking of how all the plans and ideas that Sakar Baba had, that Sakar Baba shared, Baba saw only a fraction of those things take practical shape on a physical level. And all the rest has been 30 years later, Baba watching it from the subtle region, or Baba making it happen from the subtle region, not just watching, but actually making it happen from the subtle region. And so patience and more patience and more patience. And so that's another big lesson to learn. So let me not get stuck in any of these things, because the problem there is that where I say my idea or my plan, and I don't find consensus or agreement or support from that, I take sorrow from that. But what Baba did was, it wasn't the right time. It's okay. Baba shared it, and that was enough. That's all Baba needed to do. It was like that he was with the Palestinian scholars. And most of the time, when Daddy made a statement or a comment, it was fantastic. There was, you know, every meeting would be an hour and a half, 2 hours. And maybe Daddy's presence, of course, that speaks for itself and has its own power. But the actual words, that there are about 20 religious leaders, and calculate how many minutes, and of course there was that respect and dignity in the atmosphere in which nobody was pushing any agendas and everybody was giving others the opportunity to also speak. So I was thinking maybe in each meeting that he spoke for 2 minutes, maximum 3 minutes. Morning sessions, she had a meditation for the whole group, and many of the leaders would come to that meditation. You know, the Buddhist nuns would come, the Jewish rabbi would come, it was, and the other participants, but especially these two, so that was interesting. But within the sessions, the meetings was 2 minutes, 3 minutes, not longer than that, but it had such a terrific impact. People would come back and talk to her, or people would come back and say something, or they would applaud. And in this particular case, the Palestinians were talking about why it is they were doing the things that they were doing. They were hearing many versions of the same story, of course. Amazing, because you hear perspective from here, perspective from the opposite side of the fence, but also the Christians who were not integral to the conflict in a sense, but they are standing apart and watching. And but one was an Arab Christian, and his perspective was different to the Vatican Catholics. So really amazing to see how history is being written in different colors, depending where you stand. But so they've been putting across their side of the story. And Daddy's comment to them was, if you continue to pour petrol onto a fire, what's going to happen is that the fire just gets bigger and bigger. But if there's a fire, then the sensible thing is to pour water onto the fire. Simple, but in that context, you can imagine. And she said that there has to come a moment when one of the two sides decides the cycle of violence has to break, and we're going to be the ones who do this. And think about the power of nonviolence, and then the story of Mahatma Gandhi, of course, and so on. But is it not possible to say there's going to be nonviolence from our side, and see how the power of silence then works? And there was a sort of dead silence for some minutes, and then a young man spoke. And he said, do you mean if we are silent, Sharon is going to change his mind? Do you mean if we are silent, they're going to stop building the wall? There's this big wall that's being erected. And he had a few more questions like that. And then there was the person who'd got the meeting together, a scholar, the Islamic scholar, so he stood up and he said, but every culture is different. And yes, your culture was able to produce a Mahatma Gandhi. And there was a need for a Mahatma Gandhi at this time. and here and now, but we don't see a Mahatma Gandhi around, and maybe it's not the right culture to produce a Mahatma Gandhi. And talks went on along in that direction, and the Swami, who's a professor, his Lokic background had been a professor, very good person, Swami Ved Bharati, I haven't met him before. So he then said, if I look at the struggle between Palestine and Israel, I see inequality. And I'm talking about economic inequality, military inequality, technology inequality. And so what chance do you have? The only chance you have, and in your Islamic texts you will find this, and use the word Ruhani Taqat, which is like Hindi, but it's actually from their texts, and so Ruhani, spiritual Taqat, strength, spiritual power, that whenever there's a situation of inequality in terms of the external things, the only thing that has been able to bring justice is spiritual power. And so yes, it's a fact that there's injustice, but it's only spiritual might, spiritual power that can help put it right. And this is what they were calling Dadi, not Dadi, but the mother. So their language. So, and this is what the mother has been telling you all, that you need to have the power of nonviolence. And so he was putting it in a different expression to make it easier for them. And afterwards he told me that he was going to do a bit more research and actually get those examples from Islamic history where spiritual power has been used, because otherwise it's easy to dismiss and say, well, that's Hindu culture, but Islamic history. But it was the first time that I think in that sort of context where it was couched very politely, but it was actually an open rejection of the concepts that Dadi was putting forward. And that's what it was, really, a total rejection, that it can't work here. It's not possible to work here, so it's not going to happen. It was that sort of wall. And afterwards, Dadi was saying that it was my duty to put it to them. And even if at this moment they reject that idea, it's okay. But at some point, it's going to come back into their mind. And maybe at some point, somebody out of that group, and it's like 20 of them that were there, the Islamic scholars, one of them is going to say, well, maybe there's something here that we have to explore further. And so, having given it, then of course she was as cool and as calm as ever. And afterwards, just again, meeting them with a lot of love and whatever. And so my point that even when there's a total rejection of your idea, and usually in Brahmin life, it's never that people reject your ideas outright. Usually they'll say, but why not this? Why not this? It's not that, oh, this is not possible, you know? But in the face of that total rejection of Dadi's idea, and it's an idea which we would say is based on universal principles, principles of truth, and yet in that rejection, Dadi totally stable, totally cool, absolutely unmoved. And so I'm seeing how when we do come to that stage where, yes, I'm available as Baba's instrument, and it's an idea that's come, and it's not even my idea, and I've shared it, and it's fine, let it be out there. And then at the right time, whatever needs to happen, it'll happen. But I don't need to push it any further this moment. If I can do that, then I'm not going to accumulate any sorrow in my heart. So, this whole thing about accumulation of sorrow. So where ideas get rejected, sorrow comes. A subtle desire that I have, and where that subtle desire isn't being fulfilled. For whatever reason it is, but there's something that I want, and it's not. So where ideas get rejected, sorrow comes. A subtle desire that I have, and where that subtle desire isn't being fulfilled. For whatever reason it is, but there's something that I want, and it's not happening. And it may be in terms of service, it may be in terms of recognition, whatever it may be. Again, a personal story here. And I've forgotten that it was the 20th or the 25th year of service in London. And I'd arrived in Madhuban, and as I say, I've forgotten which year it was, but it was that particular situation. And for me, it had somehow been a big thing that it is this anniversary of service. And I was thinking that it's not just service in London, but it's like world service. And I remember it was in Om Shanti Bhavan. It wasn't in Shantivan, that's for sure, because that scene is in my mind. And I'm sitting in Om Shanti Bhavan, and I was sure that Baba would mention that it's that anniversary this year. And the whole Murli goes by, and Baba's not mentioned it. And it was still the days that there was a lot of interaction with Baba, and my ego or whatever it was, but I wasn't going to mention it to Baba. I was waiting to see if Baba was going to mention it. And Baba didn't mention it. And my expectation, and so of course, for sure, some sorrow inside, oh, well, why didn't Baba? And next day, I was with Adi Gulzar, and I had to get it out because I knew that I didn't want it to sit with me and pollute my mind, widened. And so I mentioned to Daddy, Daddy, by the way, this is the year and I'd been hoping that Baba would say something about it. And Daddy said, really? Oh, I didn't know. And why didn't you tell Baba? Or why didn't you tell me about it earlier? And that he was so light and made it seem such a little thing, which it is. It's not a big thing. And I realized that, you know, when you have a subtle expectation, then your ego gets mixed in within it, and something that could be taken care of with three words, a sentence, and you don't do it. And so it becomes your own thoughts make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And really, there's no call for it. Just don't. And so the sorrow that comes in different ways, whether it's human beings that you expect things from or whether it's Baba that you're expecting things from, it can reach as far as that. In Bhakti we expect things from God, but in Gyan we expect things from Baba. And our expectations are really not correct, because Baba's going to do that which is of benefit for you and benefit for the whole world, not because to fulfill your expectations, you know. So there's a difference between what is right and what needs to happen and what you want and your desire. And so think about why it is that sorrow comes to you. And once you've been able to identify the different things that make you experience sorrow, then you'll be able to strengthen yourself in that particular area through whatever it is that you need to do. Dropping those expectations or dropping those desires or whatever it is. Sometimes people tell me, Daddy didn't look at me when she was giving me Toli, and so it's because Daddy doesn't like me. You know, she got distracted by somebody, and it just happened to be, unfortunately, that it was you in the line at that time. And so Daddy didn't say, I'm not going to give Drishti to this person. And so what is my expectation of Daddy? So if I want Drishti, you know, there are some souls who will say to Daddy, Daddy, I don't want the Toli, I just want the Drishti. Or I'll take the Toli, but more than the Toli, I want the Drishti. And that's fine, Daddy will give you special Drishti if that's what you want. But don't hold it in your heart. So the open heart and the generous heart, you can see how Daddy said it in a sentence. The generous heart doesn't take sorrow. The honest heart doesn't give sorrow. And so really just find out what it is that causes the sorrow. So other things about lightness, it's connected a little bit with what I've been saying already, but as a general pattern, waste thoughts, either whether it's thoughts about the past or anxiety and worry about the future, either way, past or future, and this aspect of taking sorrow comes in. One of the interesting sessions that happened in Sydney was on the topic of the value of time, the importance of time and Sangam Yoga. And it's a powerful reminder that, and it's actually also a subject that's right, quite independently. It was also a subject that was taken up in the Philippines. Both times it was with non-Brahmins, but it's actually Brahmins who really, really understand the value of time. And in terms of how precious my thoughts are, just think about it for a moment. You start practicing soul consciousness, it takes one thought. And you begin to feel light immediately. You start connecting with Baba, and it again takes just one thought. And so two thoughts, and instantly your awareness has changed, and your feelings have changed, and your face has changed, whether you know it or not, it has. And the atmosphere around you has changed. That's all it took. And how long does it take to create a thought? It's a flash, not even a moment, it's a flash. And so, within the space of a fraction of a moment, you've been able to create lightness and happiness and power. And a minute of that, and a few minutes of that, and the accumulation that you have of all the power and happiness, and you can see how impactful that is. And now, just see what happens if you go the other way. You don't have a good thought. You let one thought of body consciousness come, or you have one thought about others, or you have one thought about the past, or one anxiety about the future, and just as the one powerful thought was bringing you all the good results and carrying you upwards, similarly, just the one thought, and it's going to pull you into a downward spiral. And in terms of gravity, the upward thoughts takes conscious effort. The downward thoughts, you don't have to worry or think consciously, it'll just come. It'll just happen. And so that sort of attention and checking needed for making sure that I don't get into waste thoughts, because that's going to cause me heaviness. It's going to take away my lightness. It's going to not allow me to fly. And so, again, you'll be able to identify and see what is it that causes you waste thoughts? What is it that pulls the plug and everything that you've been accumulating with attention, you know, just checking so carefully, and then when you pull out the plug, you know, no checking, it's all gone very fast. And so what is it that's causing that? Just find out for yourself. And when you identify what it is that's making you do this, then you'll be able to pick it up before it starts to happen. You'll be able to have preventative medicine so that you're not letting it happen. After it's happened, and then you try and repair the damage, meanwhile you've lost a lot of power and you're going to have to go back and gain that somehow. So the sorrow, the waste thoughts, and in particular, was it today that he was talking about comparison again? Because it comes up so much. The loss of dignity for the self, not just comparing what I can do and others can do, but comparing treatment. Well, how come that he treats this one way and that he treats this one another way? And why isn't she treating me the way she treats this one? Now, who knows why? I don't know why. I see sometimes that he gives a lot of time to an individual, and I can't ask the question why. I just know that there's a need, and that he's responding to whatever the need is, or that he's seeing something that I don't see. And time and again, later on, I get to hear the story, or later on, I get to see what's going on for myself, and I understand better. But there's no point in asking the question why. And so, whether it's, as I say, the way Baba treats someone, or the way the Dadis treat someone, no, my fortune. I loved the point that Baba was making yesterday, not just the fact of three lines of fortune, but your very birth has been fortune. Now just think about how it is you became a Brahmin and how God selected you. I said to Mirabhan, no, I don't think I'm going to revise the Murali officially, formally, but obviously whatever you've heard comes back in whatever you're sharing. So as soon as Baba made that statement yesterday about it was one of the first statements that Baba, seeing your fortune, I love Muralis about fortune anyway. They're my favorite Muralis. And in this case, then Baba was saying your birth of fortune. It was a blessing that Baba's given me personally, but also given to all of us yesterday, but also to many of you personally, I'm sure, because many Brahmins sitting, you've had that amazing fortune of personal blessings. But Baba said, your birth was through fortune, your sustenance is through fortune, and until the end, there'll be fortune. Every step that you take is fortune. And so, what is it that you do? Wherever it is you go, all you do is distribute that fortune. And what is it that you carry with yourself? It'll be fortune that you carry with you. So, I love this word, I love the way Baba explains it, but within that then, yesterday, the birth through fortune. And that's a fact for everyone. How could you be born a Brahmin if it wasn't fortune, and if it wasn't for Baba selecting you and making you belong to him? Okay, you've done your bhakti, you've looked for God, you've done all of that, but yet ultimately it's just amazing fortune that God found you and made you belong to him. And so I don't need to look at anyone else. Whatever their fortune is, wonderful. Let them enjoy their fortune. But my fortune is mine. And so let me enjoy my fortune. And so really no need for comparison on any level whatsoever. Again, for Lokic people, not to compare is difficult. But for Brahmins, it's the most natural thing because Baba's told us each soul is unique, each soul has a part that's unique, each soul has a role that's unique, and so really, your fortune and how can there be comparison in any case? So waste thoughts, big, big trigger for sorrow and waste thoughts is comparison. I've seen that happen so often. What else is it that makes you light? Remembering that Baba's responsible. And there's a difference in just saying it and believing it and feeling it and living it. Really. I say it, especially abroad, you know, we have this habit of saying, instead of using the word my car, Baba's car, not my house, it's Baba's house. Somehow most people abroad have this in their language. I don't know about India whether they also do that, but certainly abroad we... very rarely do I hear people say my car, my house, or my anything. It's Baba's house, Baba's car, and so on. So we've got it in our language, but my life, well, who's responsible? It's Baba who's given me birth. And literally, we could not have survived all the challenges and obstacles that, whether it was that came our way because of our karma, or came our way because of Maya or our sanskaras, whatever it was, but the fact that you're sitting here in Madhuban, happy and smiling and in God's home being sustained by God, it's Baba, right? Our effort, it's minuscule. And Baba's help, it's a thousandfold, multi-millionfold. And so, who is responsible? It is Baba. And I don't have to remind Baba and say, Baba, why aren't you doing something? But Baba is doing everything. But I have to remind myself that this is the case and feel it at every step. And then really, whether it's physical things, external things, or whether it's spiritual stage, or whether it's service. Service is actually a wonderful opportunity for us to create fortune. But where service becomes pressure and responsibility and heaviness, then again, where you've either been through it or you see others go through it, and it's not fortune anymore. There's something not there. So, no area of my life should be one in which I feel the burden of responsibility. To carry the sense of responsibility in terms of accuracy in what I need to do, well, that's Srimad. That's not a burden. Baba Srimad is that what I do, I have to do properly. I have to do accurately. And if I'm not doing things accurately, then Baba's not going to be responsible either, because I've already stepped out of the line of Srimad. And if I've stepped out of the line of Srimad, then there's a problem. But if I'm holding Baba's hand, and I'm following Srimad, and I'm doing what I need to do accurately, then really, whether it's my physical health, whether it's my physical circumstances, whether it's my job, whether it's relationships or then service, I really don't have to carry any burden. I can stay totally light and Baba will be responsible. So I'm sure there's many more factors that you can add to the list of what it is that creates lightness or what it is that takes away lightness. But it was a very short and simple answer to this question. What's the shortcut to a high stage? Stay light. So,